Russia's foreign minister is urging Britain to produce its evidence in the poisoning of an ex-Russian spy in the UK. Britain says Russia was responsible for the nerve agent attack on the spy and his daughter back in March. It is a charge that Moscow denies. Meantime, there is growing debate inside Great Britain about the case. The opposition Labour Party wants an investigation into whether Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson misled the public about Russian involvement in the poisoning. Sir Kim Derrick is the United Kingdom's ambassador to the United States, and he joins us now in the studio. Ambassador, welcome. And as we said, Russia says it was not behind this attack. Is your government 100% sure that the nerve agent came from Russia?
We absolutely are. The Russians are the ones who make nerve agents, and they have a track record of doing that. And Novichok, which is the one was used in this case, was made back in the 1980s, military-grade agent. They have a track record of using nerve agents, and they have a track record of state-sponsored assassinations. Add all of that together, not just us, but in the Court of International Opinion, because I think 28 countries have taken action against Russia. There's no doubt in our minds of their culpability.
No doubt whatsoever.
No doubt.
As you know, there was a storm over this week over a tweet that the UK Foreign Office deleted, which said that the nerve agent was created in Russia. So why delete the tweet, if you're so sure?
That tweet was just misinterpreted, I think. That all comes from this story about the senior scientist at Portendown, which is our chemical weapon
laboratory.
Yeah. Saying that he couldn't prove that Russia was responsible. And, I mean, the truth about this is that's only a small part of the picture of what we know about what has happened and why we believe Russia was culpable. It was never the job of Portendown to assess whether, to do a kind of Sherlock Holmes thing on who was responsible. It was their job to establish that it was Novichok, which is made by the Russians. There's intelligence and other sources of information which also point the finger towards Russia. So you've got to put the whole picture together establish culpability.
And
that's what we've
done. It did give Russia ammunition then to step up and say, look, see, they're not so sure after all. I mean, it opened the door to some
doubt. We're sure. I mean, tweets come and go, but we are sure, and so have all our friends and allies been around the world, and there's no question about this.
Do you think it goes right to the top, to the Kremlin?
I wouldn't be able to say that, but we certainly suspect that something like this would not have happened without the Russian state, one way or another, signing off on it.
Now, after the expulsion of Russian diplomats around the world in response to this, there have been many comparisons to the Cold War. You know, that word has come up a lot. Of course, I don't need to tell you that's a very dangerous time in history. Is it worth it to escalate it to that level? And do you agree with those comparisons?
Look, we don't use language about return of a Cold War. What we do say is that Russia is behaving outside all the accepted standards of international behavior, whether in what it's doing in Ukraine, whether it's in its takeover of Crimea, whether it's what it's doing in Syria, or what it's done in Salisbury, England. So for us, it's an issue of Russian behavior outside international norms and the importance of them recognizing this. And if they want to come back to be a respected and functioning member of the international community, that all needs to change.
The United States is standing by you, as you know. What were the conversations that you had with the Trump administration about their decision to expel diplomats and close the consulate in Seattle?
We talked at lots of levels to the U.S. administration. Prime Minister, I think, talked three times in all to the American president about this, and whether it was Foreign Secretary to the Acting Secretary of State here, or our Defense Secretary to his counterpart, or me to people in the White House and in the State Department. There was a huge amount of interaction, agency to agency as well, intelligence security agencies. And let me say, we were hugely appreciative of the decisiveness and strength that the president showed in that decision to expel 60 Russian diplomats. This was
no hesitation by the Trump administration whatsoever.
I think that the timing was about coordination with all the announcements of expulsions by Europeans, which, if you remember, it all came together on that Monday. So I think that was what determined the timing.
That will be very interesting for Americans to hear because, as you know, there has been a conversation in this country about our president's response to Russia. On the one hand, the administration is applying new sanctions. It has also said it's going to kick out these diplomats. But on the other hand, the president has been unwilling to publicly speak poorly of Vladimir Putin. So I just want to be clear. I mean, from your interpretation of how this went down, you're saying that the Trump administration never questioned the fact that it would take action against Russia.
They needed to know what our evidence was behind our attribution of this appalling act to Russia. So yes, we went through all of the reasons why we were convinced the Russians were behind it, and it was entirely reasonable of the administration to say, well, tell us everything you know about this and how it happened and why you're so sure it was Russian attribution. Once that was established, we were always confident that the administration would have our back and that would support us. And so they did. And, you know, the Prime Minister, as I said, three conversations, I think, with the President, in each of which he was supportive. He said in one of them something like, I'm going to be behind the UK all the way on this. So we have nothing but praise for the way that that he personally and the administration generally responded.
Okay, let's talk about some other issues. How about Syria, which is another topic of conversation here? A soldier from the United Kingdom was killed last week in Syria. So you have your own forces there, and so this is a timely topic for you as well. The debate now is whether or not the United States should get out of Syria, how quickly it should, and I want to ask you, you know, what you think the right move is for the future of both your own country's involvement in Syria and also the United States.
Yeah. Look, it's understandable that there is a lively debate in all of the countries which are involved in Syria, or in Iraq, or in Libya, about the extent of our involvement and the duration of our involvement. And that's normal in democratic societies. Let's remember that in Syria, we have, however, had a major success in defeating Daesh and in driving them out of Raqqa.
Or the Islamic State.
The Islamic State. Right. And it's important that we and confirm and capitalize on that success and that we don't kind of let things revert. So we support what the U.S. administration has done in Syria. As you imply, we have been playing our part too.
Will your mission change anytime soon?
Well, the Islamic State forces have been defeated and driven out of Raqqa. They've not vanished from the face of the earth. So there's always a risk that they can return if there is a vacuum, if there is a space.
And we also know, sorry to interrupt you, but we also know that even if there are just tiny pockets of the Islamic State left in certain areas, it doesn't mean it's going to be easy just to finish them off. I mean, it could take years.
Yeah.
Isn't that fair to say?
Well, I don't know about years, but they are certainly, we would say, not finished yet. And, you know, we will be working with the administration, putting our own views on exit strategies and what we should do next to them and trying to find a collective way forward.
Look, you're sitting here in front of me because you are in Boston to mark the 20th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. Of course, 1998, a deal designed to end decades of violence in Northern Ireland. Did you think the agreement would hold together this long?
I remember when I was actually working in Brussels when the agreement was made, and it was quite an extraordinary moment after those decades of the Troubles. And I was hugely hopeful that it would stick. But let's be clear, it's required a huge amount of work by successive British governments.
And there have been major setbacks.
There have been setbacks, but we've overcome them, and we will overcome, I am sure, the issues that we face at the moment. But I was Europe advisor in Tony Blair's government 2004 to 2007. I just remember how every few weeks the Northern Irish politicians would descend on Number 10, and basically for 2 days the Prime Minister and his small team, would do nothing else but try. At that stage, they were trying to restore power sharing and devolve government in Belfast. And they got there with, I think, the agreement in 2006.
But right now, that body is not functioning.
It's not functioning. You're right. We're back into that situation. But, you know, the new generation of British leaders and politicians who are ministers who are addressing this are working extremely hard to get back to devolved government. That's absolutely our objective. You know, we don't have any wish to be running things from Westminster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm optimistic that they will get there.
How much of a threat to peace will we see if there is a return with Brexit? There's a new hard border between the Republic of Ireland and the North.
Well, there's not going to be. Prime Minister has pledged absolutely there is going to be no hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland.
Do you think people in Northern Ireland are hearing that message?
Well, we couldn't be any clearer. I mean, we've said it. I mean, it's not a straightforward issue in terms, because it's tied up with the nature of the future relationship between the UK and the EU once we've left. But I hope people in Northern Ireland will accept that when the government says something as clearly and as emphatically as we've said it, then that's what we're going to stick to, and they can trust us to one way or another deliver this.
Ambassador Kim Derrick, thank you.
Thank you very much.